Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, and we're starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you are interested in investing in real estate, do not miss my Intentional Investor webinar series. 18 parts, 9 parts webinar, 9 ebooks, all together, one package. Just go to thinklink.com and click on the red house. It will take you to more details. All right, lines are open, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I am tweeting already at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. Be sure to follow me on Twitter. If you are not, you are already missing part of the conversation. So much to talk about. This has been a really busy August for housing news. I'm kind of surprised. I left for Alaska, and I thought, well, usually this is a pretty quiet time. But why would I be surprised that it has not been quiet? It has been crazy busy. Mortgage interest rates have now, we are seeing a profound impact on home sales. The new numbers came out this week. We've got the S&P Case-Shiller Index coming out this coming week. We have seen the consumer confidence numbers start to plunge, and the August Consumer Confidence Index is expected to show a month-over-month decline, which is not good news for retailers who have been battered. I suppose there's some good news, I guess, by, you know, thank you, Microsoft. Ballmer announced his intended resignation, and so that went up 10%, and that carried the Dow up a bit, but we're still down about 70 points for the week. We ended at 15,010, down about 71 points, and it was a lot worse than that. We were back into the 14,000 mark before that happened. So this has been just kind of a crazy time. A lot of uncertainty. Interest rates and what the Fed is going to do is creating so much uncertainty and nervousness for investors, for home buyers. And we're definitely seeing that interest rates, despite the fact that they're still at near historic lows, the psychological factor that interest rates are going up and have gone up one percentage point is taking a toll. So we saw that new home sales actually fell dramatically, 13.4% in July. The seasonally adjusted annual sales pace of 394,000 missed analysts' expectations of 487,000. It wasn't even close, folks. Wasn't even close. So detached. I mean, to be off by 100,000 is really significant. And there was, in June, right, we were at 497,000 for an annualized basis. And let me just step back and explain what that means, because I don't want you even to think that we're actually going to sell, that we're on pace to sell almost 500,000 homes this year. We aren't. What an annualized pace means is that if it held up at the pace that it was at that month for the whole year, yes, then we would sell 487,000 homes or 500,000 homes. But we've had a bunch of months where it's a lot lower than that. And so I'm expecting right now that we will sell maybe 360 to 370,000 new homes in this country. We should be selling 1 million new homes in this country. We're still down 60 to 75% from the high, which in anybody's estimation is a big, fat, bear market. And one of the reasons that's happening is that homes can't get built as fast as people might want to buy them. So whatever's left, the home prices are going up. And sure enough, that's what we've been seeing. The Zillow number, which always comes out about a week ahead of the S&P Case-Shiller, Zillow numbers are showing the prices are going up. And that's because we're seeing there's just a limited supply. And why is it that builders can't build houses faster? Well, over the last 6 or 7 years, you've had tens of thousands of people who built houses go out of business. They've lost those skills. They've gone and done something else because they absolutely had to make a living, and there was no way to make a living. They couldn't actually build houses. Nobody was going to buy them. And so they're all out of the marketplace. We had production ramp down, and now it has to ramp up, and there's limited supplies out there. You need drywall. You need plywood to build houses. You need all kinds of plumbing fixtures. You need concrete. You need all kinds of things that go into the foundation. Well, if you don't have enough of that on hand, really hard to get a hold of it to build what you want to build. And so there are just places, roadblocks, obstacles that are in the way that need to be smoothed out. And nobody wants to add capacity if they're not sure that it's actually going to last. So if mortgage interest rates go up another 1% and we see another new home sale plunge of 13%, what will that actually mean? Now, sales were still higher, close to 6.8% than a year ago. So we are seeing it go up, but where were we a year ago? Last year, 2012, home sales, new home sales were at like the second lowest level ever in history since they've been keeping the numbers for 40 years. So anybody who tells you that the economy is going gangbusters and is back on track is passing you something that we should all be sharing. It just is not the case yet. And it makes me really nervous that we're out there buying homes and doing what we need to do, you know, you and me and the rest of the consumers, and what's going on is a big, huge disconnect in D.C. They're trying to solve, you know, Ben Bernanke is trying to solve the world's problems. And there was some story I read this week, maybe it was the Journal, Wall Street Journal, I can't remember, where basically the world is looking at what Bernanke is doing and trying to figure out how to respond to it so that their own economies don't go into free fall. That is how much everybody is depending on the U.S. And so that's why the stock market continues to skyrocket, right? It continues. 15,000 is a really high level, right? We've come all the way back from where we were at 6,600, 6,800, wherever that was, in 2009, 4 years ago. And we're at 15,000, so we've more than doubled. But it doesn't mean that everything's fixed. And yet, we're a better deal than almost anywhere else in the country, I mean in the world. It's really interesting what's going on right now. So mortgage interest rates have jumped up about 1%, and they're just kind of hanging there, right? Because mortgage interest rates are a function of what's going on in the bond market. There are all kinds of traders in the bond market, and they're bidding against each other for notes back and forth, and that's what changes the interest rate that we end up living with, unless, of course, you're a big bank over in London, you're just manipulating it. But in the real world, this is how it's supposed to work. And so mortgage interest rates have gone up 1%. Everybody is waiting because the Fed has kind of indicated that they might be tempted to start holding back and ratcheting down the mortgage-backed securities that they've been buying. Remember, they've been buying mortgage-backed securities and other kinds of securities at the rate of $85 billion, with a B, billion dollars a month. And they're thinking of ratcheting that back. And if they, and the threat that they're going to ratchet it back, that we're going to all have to unplug from the drugs that we have been taking, the drug of choice, the Fed buying mortgage-backed securities, that threat has caused or wreaked havoc in the bond market, which is why interest rates have gone up, and now we're seeing the first month of reaction. New home sales plunging. And that's just bad for everybody. So I can stay on air all day long, and I can tell you that 2 or 3 years ago, when interest rate hit, more 30-year rate hit 4.5% for the first time in 30 years, or whatever it was, this was an amazing rate, and people jumped at the chance to grab those mortgages. And now that you've seen 3.5%, 4.5% just seems high. It seems unaffordable. And meanwhile, it's the people that you're competing against, right, because home prices are going up, because hedge funds and private equity and institutional investors are all in there buying all the homes that they can get their hands on. It's a mess out there. And if you are buying a house, it is really tough. My big piece of advice for anybody buying a house right now is who wants to live in this house is to go to HUDHomestore.com, HUD, H-U-D, homestore.com, and take a look at the foreclosures out there, because they will give precedence to people who want to live in these houses. Owner occupancy, key for HUD. They want you to live in these houses, and so you get a two-week start, head start on foreclosures for anybody else. I had another interesting conversation this week that I want to talk to you about, and then we're going to take some questions, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We're going to take some questions as well, and lines are open right now, so if you want to call and get in the queue, this is a good time to do that. But I also want to talk about the Zillow numbers and where home prices are going up, because they have jumped dramatically in Atlanta, up 10% year over year. And I want to talk about what that means. The rent index is up as well, which is also really important. So we're going to talk about that. Lots to catch up on since I've been away, and happy to take all of your calls. All right. 404-872-0750. It is 11:18 on the Elise Glink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, on News Talk WSB.
Every Sunday, Elise Glink is live and here to guide you through your money and real estate questions. Only on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
11:24 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. How can I help you today? Let me know. All right, Heather joins us on the line. Hi, Heather. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you today?
I'm fine, thanks. What's on your mind?
Good. I just wanted to, I appreciate all the statistics that you give every week, and I'm a real estate agent, almost 20 years in the business here in Atlanta, so it's always interesting to tune in. But you know, at least I sort of measure what's going on in the market, particularly in Atlanta and primarily, I guess, in town, which is where I concentrate my business, on what's going on at the end of my nose. And it's really very strong. I mean, you know, despite, yeah, the interest rates have ticked up a bit, but people aren't going to quit buying houses just because they're 4.5% interest rates. And I think that it's...
What is the average purchase price that you work with, Heather?
You know, quite honestly, I do almost everything, but I'd say between 500 and 1.5 million.
So you're
like
exactly right. People in your price range are not affected by a 1% rise in interest rates.
Right.
However, that is the teeniest, tiniest slice of this market, especially
right.
in a market like Atlanta. And
right.
so first-time homebuyers, on the other hand, which are a much smaller percentage of the overall market than they should be at this point in time, are
yep.
dramatically affected by that. And so
yep.
you're right for what happens at the end of your nose. I
right.
don't think you're right for what's happening in the larger sphere, which is what I'm talking about.
I hear you. Okay. Well, I just wanted to add a positive note because, I feel like it's, you know, there are very strong sectors, and I can appreciate that perhaps that first-time home buyer is definitely more affected. So.
Well, they are, you know, they are for sure. I mean, if I were buying a house for $1.5 million, I don't really care what happens between 3.5% and 4.5%, because frankly, the interest rate that your clients are paying, if they're
right.
even taking an interest rate, is already 4.5% to 5%. So them hearing me say that interest rates have ticked up a bit, as a matter of fact, they really haven't in that million-plus marketplace. There are some amazing interest rate deals going on right now. If you're borrowing $1 million and you have assets of $5 to $7 million, good for you, right? Because you're
yep.
getting deals
yep.
nobody else is getting. What was it? Mark Zuckerberg just borrowed $5 million at,
right.
I think, 1.5%?
I think that we can call that a jumbo loan.
Yeah, I think we can call it a jumbo loan, and we can say he's doing great. Of course, he doesn't really need the money,
right.
but okay. So in your marketplace, I think you are right. But the problem that I have with realtors and other industry observers who just measure performance based on what's happening right in front of them is that it leaves out a tremendous number of people. So you might work with 20 or 30 clients in a year. Maybe you'll do 20 or 30 sides of a transaction, but it doesn't give you that broad perspective on what's really happening in a marketplace. And that's what I'm trying to bring to the show each week. But I do appreciate you calling and delighted that things are going well for you, and I hope it continues. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink. We are Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on AM 750, now 95.5 FM, News Talk WSB. welcome back, everybody. It is 11:36 on the Elise Kling Show, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online all the time, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to check out the weekly newsletter. We have, actually it's twice weekly now, brand new design. It looks great, and it has all kinds of links in it to all the different content we produce in the ThinkLink community. Stuff that appears on AOL and Yahoo and CBS News and all the rest. And if you want to stay on top of housing and what I think about housing, this is the place to go. And we want you to go there for sure. So take a look. Go to thinklink.com. It's free. Sign up on any page for the weekly newsletter. And it is your key to everything going on in ThinkLink. So I had a conversation this week with a friend of mine who's in the mortgage industry. He's a senior VP level at one of the big banks. And we were talking about delinquencies. And he was telling me how in his bank they were doing really well and that the delinquency rate has now fallen to about 6-point-something%. And everybody else in the industry, he thought it was around 10%, which was interesting because the new numbers that came out earlier this month show that the delinquency rate for seriously delinquent loans, that's typically more than 90 days, has fallen to almost about 7%, down from 7.25% and down from 7.5% a year ago, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. So, and fewer home, and that's good news, by the way. But it's still, just to put it in perspective, you should have like less than 2%. Right? So we're at 7% and it should be at less than 2% should be of homeowners should be 90 days or longer delinquent on their mortgages. For 30-day delinquencies, we should be no more than 4%. Most 30-day delinquencies, people who get late in a mortgage, they're counted 30 days late if they miss their mortgage payment. But most of those self-correct. People, you know, just forget to send it in or it gets delayed in the mail or whatever it is. Or maybe they are late, they didn't have the money, and then they get the money and they pay it and they catch up. So that should be, you know, far less. And, you know, it's going down as well. So one of the people I was talking to, we were talking about how much better their bank is at 7% versus everybody else at 10%. And I thought to myself, 10% and even 7% is still a huge number. And the reason I think it's a huge number is that you've now had 5 or 6 million Americans who were seriously delinquent go into foreclosure. And they're now out of the system. They're not even counted anymore, right? If you added those people back in, the seriously delinquent rate would be probably over 10 or 12% at this point. But they've all come out of the marketplace. They're done. And so you've cut those people out, and so the number, of course, is going to get better, right? So the when you read a story and it says the delinquency rate on mortgages fell in the second quarter of this year to the lowest level since mid-2008, you can come to the conclusion that the housing market recovery is gaining traction. Or you could say that we are simply cutting out, you know, this is all the bad fruit that fell off the tree, and so the tree looks much healthier now, right? So improving is really important, but it's not fixing it. So what fixes delinquencies, mortgage delinquencies? And what, in my mind, what fixes delinquencies is the economy and the jobless rate. So the more people get employed and have jobs, the less number of people who will be paying late on their mortgages. Because if you have a mortgage and you have a house, you crave stability. You want to stay in your home. You love your home. You're raising your children. You've raised your children. You're planted into a neighborhood. Most people don't want to leave their houses. They buy houses that they like, and then they get entrenched in a neighborhood, and they want to stay there. Maybe they want to stay there because it's too hard to think about moving. But whatever the reason is, people get into a house and they want to stay. So having a job that pays you enough to actually stay in a house is super important, right? But it's not happening quite the way, and I understand that Heather with, you know, selling $500,000 to $1.5 million houses is not seeing this. And that marketplace is very strong right now, and there are a whole bunch of reasons for that, and we can talk about it. Mortgage interest rates being one of them, by the way. And not in the way you think. Mortgage interest rates for a $500,000 or $600,000 house are so low that two people making $75,000 a year who are married or together as partners can buy a $600,000 house, and they used to not be able to. So that is where interest rates come into play, at the low end of her marketplace. But when you think about who's actually paying on their mortgage, and you think about who's getting employed, you have to look at the larger numbers of unemployment. And while the overall official rate of unemployment is coming down, it's really not coming down that much. And we're seeing part-time jobs and jobs that pay less money being the jobs that are created. So when you have more jobs created at McDonald's, it doesn't mean you're going to end up and translate into more people buying houses. It's not going to happen. People who make the minimum wage cannot afford to buy houses, even at the greatly reduced prices that they're at right now. And if you have a mortgage and you've been out of work and you finally get a job flipping burgers somewhere, it's probably a lot less than the money you were making when you went to buy that house and you qualified for that loan. And so you are going to have a very tough time making that mortgage payment. Really important. Now, the other numbers from the Mortgage Bankers Association show that there are fewer homes in the foreclosure process right now. Fewer homes in the foreclosure process. And we are seeing that the foreclosure inventory is down to 3.33%. And according to the mortgage bankers, in normal times, the foreclosure inventory has ranged from 1 to 1.5%. All right, so we are more than double the highest average typical range of foreclosure homes. So what does that tell me? Well, it's down from a peak of 5%. It's at 3.33%. Okay, so that is definitely an improvement. And that just means that all those foreclosure homes have been processed and sold, and we're not adding to the inventory at the same rate. And that is good news. But it's not the end of the story. We're not at the end of the story yet, and everybody is so exhausted. It's like a book that just goes on too long, right? You just get tired of it. And some people just want to, you know, if you've got a 1,000-page book and you're like halfway through it and it's not super compelling anymore, or you're just tired of reading this story, you're like, or a movie that, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, why didn't the editor cut an extra hour out of this movie? You just sort of give up, right? I've walked out of movies because I just thought the editor did such a lousy job and they're wasting my time. And for a lot of people, that's where we are with the story of this recession. It has gone on so long and it's not over yet, and we haven't solved all the problems. And people are saying, I'm just tired of this story. I want to move on. I want there to be better news. We're also conditioned to what happens after 8 minutes on a television show, right? What happens? We have a commercial break. Our minds get to, you know, think about something else for a moment. And so that conditioning of let's just get through it and get through it quickly is there. It's like inbred in all of our, you know, new generations. There's another interesting sort of entertainment theory that plays into our attention spans as well, which is that now, and funny, Kevin Spacey, the actor, said this on, he's promoting a new series, I don't know what channel it's on, or maybe it's with Netflix or something, that he's done. And he was saying that, you know, we used to build television shows week in, week out with cliffhangers, right? That was the whole thing behind daily soap operas. So if you were a Bold and the Beautiful or an All My Children fan, you came back the next day because there were cliffhangers that were built in every single day that made you want to come back. And he argues that the era of cliffhangers is over. The people just want to do binge television watching. And I did this, actually. I did this when I was watching Downton Abbey. We had somehow missed it, and so we went on our Amazon.com account, and we were able to see it all. And we started watching them, and we just wanted to watch them all back-to-back. In fact, Sam and I sat there one weekend, and we watched the whole first season over the course of 2 days. And so the cliffhanger theory of building television programs that actually has cliffhangers that go week to week to bring you back, Kevin Spacey and many others in the industry are arguing that's over. Like, we just want all the information at once, get done with it, and then move on to the next thing. And the story of the recovery, right, the housing recovery, for a lot of people, we're just in overload. We're exhausted from it. It's the book that never ends, the television show with too many cliffhangers. We all want to get back to our regularly scheduled lives. And I wish we could all get back to our regularly scheduled lives. And I'm sure the people who are still in the throes of this would like to get back to their regularly scheduled lives. In fact, I'm absolutely certain of it. So when we come back, I'm going to read you a story that's been going on since 2011. It's actually a letter, an email that I got from a reader in 2011, 2 years ago, who this week managed to solve his HARP refinance issue. This week. Took over 2 years. And I guarantee you, he's totally exhausted by it. And when you listen to how it all wound up, I think you're going to say, oh my God, it all got resolved in 72 hours after 2 years of waiting. And like me, you're going to shake your head. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. We've got some lines open. I am going to take your calls about anything, really, on the Elise Klink Show. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
Expert money advice you can depend on anytime at ClarkHoward.com and midday every Sunday with Elise Klink on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Klink, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Wendy joins me on the line right now from Sandy Springs. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. What's going on?
Well, I am refinancing the house that I had before I got married. And I was supposed to close on the 15th. They moved it to the 21st, and it was supposed to happen on Friday afternoon. When I sat down with the real estate attorney from the mortgage company, the lady said, you know, well, your name is, and it was my former name. And I said, well, I can't sign these documents. And then we were going through the rest of the documents. It seemed like there were 100 documents. And they had my husband's name on them as the mortgagor and throughout the entire process, they never asked for my husband's information, nor has he ever paid for anything on this house. And I said, wait a minute, I can't find these documents. And they said, oh, this is common practice with all the big lenders, and that George is probably a community property state. And I said, I don't think so. And I said, this is my home. And you never asked for any of his documents. It's based on me, you know, and my earnings. And I'm real confused and I'm distressed. I can't find these documents. Well, you've got 72 hours, if we close again on Monday, to decide. Otherwise, you're right, you're 30, we hit a new month and your rates could go up. And I said, but this isn't my error. You got my documents wrong on so many different levels. He was on the security deed. And
that's insane. It's totally insane. I'm so glad you didn't sign those documents.
But well, what what about my rates? Are my rates going to go up? Because they've redone it. So anyway, I called a friend of ours who's a real estate attorney, and I brought him the documents yesterday, and he said, you're lucky you didn't sign it. Because, you know, we both have our own estate planning people.
Right.
And they say not to, you know, not to keep your property separate. And this is like my, you know, this is part of my retirement strategy, is that I rent this house out. It's nearly paid for. It owes very, very little, not even probably a 20th of what the value of the property is worth. And so I don't know what to do. I'm just about to closing tomorrow. I said I want to have the document before the closing, not when I sit down at the table. I want somebody else to review them on my behalf, because I'm not convinced that either you acted in good faith or that you're competent.
Right. So Wendy, you have to just, you might lose this interest rate because of their error and have to sue them on the other side to give it back to you. But you should not, your instincts are exactly right. You shouldn't sign documents like this. You should insist that they provide you with documentation that has your name. And what you may need to do is have your real estate attorney friend go with you and call on your behalf and say, I represent Wendy, and you guys are breaking the law here, and this isn't right. And you make it right for her, or we're going to sue you. And you may have to take that kind of a hard-nosed approach. And having your friend, who's a real estate attorney, make that call will probably get you a whole lot farther than you doing it yourself. And I highly recommend that you come out with both guns blazing, not to use that metaphor, because otherwise you will lose that interest rate. It'll just go into the ether, even though that's not fair and it is their mistake. 404-872-0750. Have you gone through the same problem that Wendy has? I'd love to hear about it. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Kling, rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours on News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Kling is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Kling Show, live on Sundays 11 to 1 here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Oops, my chair is getting caught on my table here. Okay, we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Go to the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up for my free weekly newsletter. Follow me on Twitter. We've got a whole thing going on G+. We are very connected here in the social media world, and we would love to connect with you. So go ahead and do that. And if you're looking for ThinkLink community information, you're going to find it at AOL and at Yahoo and at CBS News, the Equifax Finance blog, which is just a great source, like 900 really great pages of information on how credit affects you and your tax issues and real estate, investing, retirement, family money, insurance. Really important when it comes to insurance. So all things on credit at the Equifax Finance blog, so that's good as well. 404-872-0750. So we were talking with Wendy, and she went to go to refinance her own rental property. She's married, but this is her property. She's had it for years, and what she found was her husband's name all over the documents, even though nobody ever asked her for any of her husband's information, and she qualified all on her own. Deborah joins me now on the phone. Deborah, you're a divorce attorney, is that right?
Right, and here's one of the things that happens. Even though this may have been her premarital property, once you're married, we are an equitable division state. So the documents they were asking her husband to sign were not to give him an interest in the property, but to say that he's aware that she's refinancing this property and he's waiving his interest in it. Because you can imagine that it often happens where people will start refinancing properties. They get it without the knowledge of their spouse. They could be taking marital equity out of a property without their spouse knowing it. So it's really to protect the spouses so that they're saying, yes, I have knowledge she's refinancing. It's her money. She can have it. And they have to notify the spouse, even if they have no interest in the property, no anything in the property. It's saying
But Deborah, that doesn't sound, that's one page. That doesn't sound like what she was describing. What it sounds to me as though is that they put his name on the mortgage, his name as owner on the deed, his name all the way through the documentation. When you have a spouse signing off on that, and I have done that with property my husband owns, that's not what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know what she was telling me. When she did mention they were saying, well, this is a community property state and it was a refinance, you know, it's hard to know what she really saw. You know, sometimes you see one name on one page and that makes you go crazy. Oh, my God, his name's on the page. And maybe she didn't talk to her husband about the refinance. Who knows? But, I mean, I think that most of the time, the banks do get it. Most of the time they get it right. I mean, they do this all the time, and I'd be doubtful. I've never seen where they try to put a spouse on a property that, but you know, in her case, that may have been it. But it smells to me a little bit like she didn't want to have his name on anything. But you know, who knows?
Well, I understand having to sign, you know, where the spouse has to sign something that says this isn't it. Again, I've done that with property that Sam owns in his own name, but she actually took it to her friend who's a real estate attorney and showed him, and he was like, no.
Sign that, because it may have been more than what she expected it to be. But
maybe.
And that's most of the time to tell people that if they ask a spouse to sign, it doesn't mean they're giving them an interest in the property.
Right.
Maybe in this case it was just a mistake. But in general, your spouse will have to sign something when you're refinancing, even if it's a premarital property.
Sounds good. A great point. Thanks for making it.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Joan joins me on the line. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
What's going on?
I want to know if it's legal to include the next year's homeowner's insurance on the HUD 1 settlement statement and the closing costs and the next year's taxes on the settlement statement for closing costs when this year's taxes were prorated and they charged $726 to the seller, but yet they've got that included in the closing costs.
Okay, so let's talk about what exactly you're seeing, because I'm a little confused by it. So when you have a HUD-1 statement, a HUD-1 statement shows you all the money that's going into the deal, right, that's coming from the sale, and all of the money that's going out and where it's going. Right, that's what a HUD-1 does. It shows you how the money moves in the transaction, right?
Yes.
So are you the buyer in this property or the seller?
I'm the seller, and I was an heir, and I wasn't included in the negotiations. And I received some papers showing that the man should have possession and close by August 11th. And the real estate agent didn't call me until August the 15th, wanting to know if I'd signed the papers. I didn't even have any papers.
Okay. Who did the negotiations for you? Was there an executor of the estate?
My two sisters. Did everything without including me.
Why did they do that if you weren't?
Wait,
hold on a second, Joan. Why did they do all the negotiation and not include you if you were in error?
The judge ordered the house to be sold, and the real estate agent claimed she didn't know anything about me Friday when she called. But when I called her Monday, I said, "Wasn't my name on the judge's order?" And she said, "Yes." So my sister signed to give him a credit of $6,500. Towards repairs on the house.
Uh-huh.
And that's charged us on the front of the closing statement. And then they put the next year's homeowner's insurance on the closing cost and the next year's taxes on the closing cost. And the loan was for $107,000 and the selling price was $109,000.
Okay. So I'm okay. So let's back it up a little bit. I don't understand what kind of a loan the buyer got for almost 100% of the sales price of the property, unless the property is worth a lot more and they did an appraisal and the appraisal came back at like $130,000.
We're trying to get an appraisal now, and the buyer signed papers to buy the house for $89,000. And he was supposed to close by August 11th and have possession. The real estate agent called me August 15th.
Hold on a second. I don't understand how he could have a loan for $107,000 but buy the property for $89,000.
Well, he said he wasn't willing to buy it later unless he got two lots that didn't go with the house and the judge didn't order sold. So he's supposedly paying $10,000 a lot, another $20,000, which makes it $109,000, and his loan is $107,000.
You called me, Joan, because you know this doesn't smell right.
No, it doesn't.
But you must not be talking to your sisters.
No, we've been ordered not to talk to each other.
Uh-huh. And why is that? What happened with your sisters?
On the estate, they, contrary to my mother's will, they went in and cleaned out everything out of the house. It was supposed to be divided. And there's been some disputes about that, and we were ordered not to talk to each other.
Okay, so they basically pillaged the house.
Yes.
And you got mad, and you sued them?
They sued me first to force the sale of a house before, right after my mother died, and they hadn't even told me. I had been talking to them then. They hadn't even told me the house was for sale. And then they told me to get an attorney, and I didn't want to. And then after I paid an attorney $900, they dismissed the suit. And then I kept the attorney, and when we found out they'd pillaged the house, he transferred it over to another court from probate court.
Okay. And so where does that lawsuit stand?
It was supposed to go to court in August, and they got a continuance, and then this house sale came up. August the 15th is when the real estate agent first called me.
Mm-hmm. So they can't do anything unless you sign the documents.
Well, it's funny about the lots. It does not smell right. But I wanted to know, is it legal to include next year's homeowner's insurance on the settlement statement, next year's taxes? And
yeah, you can pay anything you want for a buyer. Who's the buyer? Is the buyer connected in some ways to either of your sisters?
I don't know, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. It sounds to me like it's either a straw buyer, meaning it's not a real person. It is a real person, but that person is really just doing this for your two sisters or somebody connected to them, so they're trying to get a sweetheart deal. So that may be one possibility, or that this person, the straw buyer, is actually somehow in cahoots with them and they're all going to share it.
My sister told me right after my mother died that they were going to sell two lots separate because they could get more money for them separate. And that now they're saying that the buyer says he wants the lots. And when I talked to the real estate agent, which called me August 15th, after it was supposed to have taken possession and nobody had notified me, when she called, she said it's so close to the appraisal, the asking price. And then when I called her back later that afternoon, she said, it's sold for $109,000. He's not going to buy the house unless he gets the lots. Then they sent me, then I got
paid. All right, Joan, let me stop you here and just say that the answer to your question is it's illegal for sellers to pay for anything or give credits for anything they want to, for the most part. I mean, lenders get a little nervous about it. I don't know who this person's lender is. You have to decide at the end of the day, if you're going to take your $35,000 and walk away and never speak to anybody again, or if you're going to fight this. If you fight this, you're going to spend more on the legal fees than you're ever going to get from it. I know it's your mother's house and you're emotionally connected to it and you're mad at your sisters, and there is so much going on here that I can't even begin to unravel. But I think you should go back to your sisters and say, I want $35,000 cash, and you can do whatever the hell you want with this property, and I don't really care anymore, because it's going to eat you up alive to live through the fight, and I don't think you're going to end up with any more money at the end of it, and probably you'll end up with less. It's 18 minutes past the hour on the Elise Gling Show. Rebuilding America one house at a time. Our number 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Gling live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. We've got some lines open. Happy to take your calls. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I got an email from Karen, who's a real estate agent in Atlanta. She's been listening to the show, and she said, love your show. Just wanted to add some input from an agent in the trenches selling in the $20,000 to $80,000 price range. She says it is very difficult to find financing for very low-priced homes that low-income people could pay for. Remember I said earlier on the show that if you're flipping burgers for minimum wage, really hard to get a mortgage that's going to buy a house. And she said that government financing regulations have ended the ability for most lenders to provide financing under $50,000. That's been true for a number of years, by the way. My lender friends all tell me that it's just not worth their while to do loans for less than maybe $40,000, $50,000. In Chicago, they won't even do it for less than $75,000. For someone making $10 an hour, she says, working 40 hours a week, you can't pay more than $350 a month for a house payment. That is a really low-priced house. Also, because I suggested you go to HUDHomestore.com and take a look for a HUD home, which is an FHA foreclosure, she says that while HUD is a good provider for homes for owner-occupants, even if the HUD property condition report says no repairs are needed, when you actually get to the inspection, there's usually something wrong, and then the house won't pass the inspection or appraisal, and HUD will not allow repairs before closing, which means that if you're trying to get financing for these houses, your lender will not allow you to qualify because the HUD won't pass inspection, yet if the seller wants to then fix the property or the lender or whoever, they can't do it, or if you want to fix the property before you actually even own it so you can close on it, you can't do it. So you end up in a catch-22 when trying to buy a HUD home. She says, in closing, I see the bottom layer of home ownership. Really important stuff. We're going to talk about all of those things and more, and it's true. This is why, one reason why so many HUD homes are going to investors paying cash. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Be right back on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. If you haven't been to my website, you should go. ThinkGlink.com, ThinkGlink.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. If you're interested in investing in real estate and you want to take advantage of what I am certain is the last gasp of this foreclosure cycle, the next 6 to 9 months are going to be key. This is your chance to scoop up properties. I just got an email from Karen, who's an agent in the northern part of Atlanta, the Atlanta metro area, and she's still selling houses for $20,000 to $80,000. Those properties are prime investment properties. How do I know? Because when you can buy a house for $20,000 and it has three bedrooms and two baths, even if it needs work, you're going to be able to make money when you rent it out at even $500 to $800 a month. And that is what goes into making a great investment. I talk about all of this in my new series, The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. It's an 18-part series, nine webinars totaling more than 2.5 hours of time, webinar time, and 9 ebooks with more than 250 pages of information. All of that together provides you with some very important, essential, basic information on how to get started investing and how to take advantage of these incredible prices and still incredible interest rates. 4.5% on a 30-year fixed is a great interest rate, no matter how you cut it, even if it's scary to some people, even if you think that it could go lower again, fine, maybe it will. But I'm telling you, for investors, if you can actually buy property and finance it at 4.5% to 5%, over the long run of owning these properties, and I am a buy and hold believer, you're going to make money and you're going to do well. And I've seen it in my own properties that I rent out, and I've seen it in my own house. This is a great way to build wealth, true wealth. So go to thinklink.com, click on the red house, and read more about the Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate webinar series, webinar and ebook series. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can take some calls. Nancy joins me on the line from Buchanan. Hey, Nancy.
Hey.
What's going on?
My husband and I are both in our 60s, and we're on a limited income, fixed income, mm-hmm. and we were just approved for a homeowner's modification. And what we're concerned about, because we were trying to keep our home, and we weren't planning on moving, but we had like a $2,000 a month house payment, and we couldn't afford it. They brought the note down to like $800 a month. The interest is down to like 2%. But mm-hmm. what we're worried about is they told us there's a balloon note in 20 years. We have to pay it off on the balloon payment in 20 years. We're both going to be a lot older then, and we don't know what we're going to be doing as far as you don't have a choice about accepting it or negotiating with them. They gave us 3 months trial period payment before it becomes firm. And we don't know if, like, we're going to have to just hang on to the house for a little while longer and then fix it to sell it because we're worried about a balloon note or it's supposed to be a government loan, not a mortgage company's loan, even though the mortgage company did it for us.
All right, Nancy, let's back up a little bit. So what happened that you suddenly couldn't afford your mortgage?
My husband had surgery, and he didn't recover from the surgery. And he had a fitted job, and I've been out of work for 3 years.
Wow. Okay, so you need some help if you want to stay in this property.
Right.
That's the first thing. Now, they're bringing the loan down to 2%. Is this now an interest-only loan?
They just said 2%. I haven't seen any of the documentation because they're not going to mail it until after we do the second trial payment.
Okay. So the concern, of course, is that you don't fall into this trap of they're going to give you 3 trial payments and then they're not going to actually go through with the permanent modification and then you'll really be behind on your payment. So you're going to have to watch out for that. What is the lender who's the servicer for this loan?
Ocwen, O-C-W-E-N.
Okay. Ocwen is actually regulated by the OCC. And that's good news for you. They regulate the very big banks as well. They regulate about 45 lenders, and they're regulating Ocwen. And so if Ocwen doesn't give you a permanent modification, you should immediately file with helpwithmybank.gov. And then help, H-E-L-P, with mybank.gov. And then you should email me the case number, and I will forward it to somebody at the OCC. That's if they don't come through. But you don't have a choice right now. So immediately what you should do is accept this deal if it brings it down to something that's affordable for you. I assume it is.
Yes.
So
like $800-something a month.
Okay. So now it's affordable for you, and now that buys you time to actually figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's what we're worried about.
But what you need to understand, do you have any equity in this house? Have you lived there a long time?
Only 10 years, so not much equity in it at all.
Okay. So you have to make sure that the interest-only loan, that this is not an interest-only loan, so that the full house payment would be due in 20 years. But even if it was, my guess is you'll probably have equity built up by then. And if you had to sell in 20 years, you'd walk away with some cash, and you'd never have to make the balloon payment.
Okay.
If, as I expect, this is an interest and principal loan, so you're actually adding to the paying down the loan as you go along, even at a very low rate, if that's the case, you're going to build up equity anyway in this property. And that's also good news, so that if you have to sell, you'll sell. My guess is that you and your husband, getting into your late 80s, probably won't stay in this house. You're going to move anyway. And so the inevitable, we're going to have to do a balloon payment, isn't going to happen. But even if it did, right, even if you got to that point, you'd still be on the same fixed income, and provided interest rates are somewhere normal, you'd be able to refinance whatever little is left in your loan, whatever the balloon amount is going to be. You'd be able to refinance it at that time, and you're refinancing for much less because you've been paying down the loan all this time. So I think either way it's going to work out. So the first thing I want you to do is take a deep breath and say to yourself, this is going to be fine. You're buying yourself time. If you didn't accept this, you'd have to move right away. Now you don't have to. And that's a good thing.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. I really appreciate it. I'm not sure if I understand the difference between that 2% interest only or 2% you said with principal.
So let me explain that to you. That's a good question. Thank you for asking it. An interest only, let's say, what is the balloon amount? Well, how much is the loan for?
Well, the balloon amount is around 150-something thousand. Originally, the loan was for 225,000.
Okay.
We, you know, we paid some down on that in 10 years.
So okay.
Probably, you know, I'm not sure what it is right now.
All right. So the amount of the refinance is 150, and is it going to stay 150 at the end of 20 years?
Well, at the end of 20 years, it's going to be to pay off the 1,500 and something, you know, 500 and something dollars.
$150,000?
Right.
Okay.
That's the balloon note.
So it looks like if you're refinancing and the amount of the refinance is 150 and you're going to have to pay 150 in 20 years, that means you have an interest-only loan. If in 20 years the 150 is going to be 75,000, then you have an interest and principal loan and you're paying down some of the principal.
Oh, that's a better one.
That would be a better one. But you have to ask that question. Now, if the amount that you have left on your loan is 200,000, but the balloon will be 150, that means you're still paying down $50,000 of equity over the time.
Uh-huh.
So you need to look at, when they send you the documents, you need to look very carefully at them to understand. But do you know where your what your house is actually worth right now?
It went down in value from 225 to about 215.
Okay. So if the balloon amount will be 150, that means there's inherently some equity in the property.
Okay.
$65,000 of equity. This is basic math, addition and subtraction. You just have to know the numbers that you're working with. So take a look at the documentation when they send it, just so you know what's going into it. And if you still don't understand, you can either send me an email at questions@thinklink.com, or you can call the show back.
Okay.
All right?
All right, that sounds good. I appreciate you explaining it because it's a nerve-wracking thing to go through that.
Oh, my God. Nancy, I imagine you and your husband aren't even sleeping at night.
No, we hadn't been for months.
All right, I want you to go and take a nap this afternoon, and then I want you to have a good night's sleep because the first hurdle is to get this in place so it buys you at least the 3 months of time. And you can figure out what you have. The second hurdle is to make it permanent. And the third hurdle is going to come down the line 20 years from now. And by then, I think everybody's going to be in a lot different place.
Okay.
But there's going to be equity in the property, and you're going to be fine.
Okay. That makes me feel a lot better. I really appreciate that. And we're just doing the best that we can do. But I also wanted to ask, it's supposed to be a government loan, like the HAMP loan.
Yeah. It's a HARP refinance, it sounds
right.
like.
Right. Are they allowed to do a balloon note?
They can do anything they want to do, yes.
Okay.
There's no regulation that says you have to do it this way or this way. It's just, you know, that you have to provide some help. And not even you have to provide some help. You're supposed to provide some help. So Aquin is providing you some help. Is it the best help you could get? Probably not. Is it the only help you're going to get? Definitely. At least for now. So take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. And call me back or send an email to questions@thinklink.com if you don't understand the paperwork when you get it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. Five minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenk. Rebuilding America, one house at a time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Michael joins me on the line. Hi, Michael.
Oh, yes, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
Well, I kind of got in a situation. I know you're going to get on to me for it.
oh, no. That's a bad way to start this call.
Well,
what happened?
I got in a, let's say my wife got in a situation, I guess, about a year or so ago where she lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of started getting behind my mortgage. Went through the modification. Got approved for that. Knocked off about $200 a month off my mortgage. Things started going seemingly better, I thought. But being that she lost her employment, working ironically for a mortgage company, I just started falling behind again even after the modification. Well, I got to the point to where I was about 3 months behind, I guess, about 3 months. But I started seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. My wife found another means of employment, and I started making a little more money. So it got to the point to where I got 3 months behind, but at the third month, I was making my mortgage payment that first week. But like clockwork, I was still remaining 3 months behind.
Right.
Well, I got all my other bills caught up. Got three kids starting college this month, and
wow,
that cost me a lot to get them going, and one kid still in high school. And I started seeing that light at the end of the tunnel where I got my cars caught up, all the rest of the bills caught up, and I'm saying, great, now I can finally get this mortgage caught up. And lo and behold, I get home yesterday, and there's two letters, one certified and one not certified from an attorney's office, stating the one that was certified said, I apologize for not having a letter right here in front of me, but it's a big, thick certified letter saying something to the effect of intent to foreclose.
Okay.
And there was another one that's not certified, sent at the exact same time by the same attorney's office, that says it was a different type of letter that said this is an attempt to collect the debt also, da-da-da-da, this to let you know you can either pay off the remaining balance of your house or contact us for payment to pay the house off or possible reinstatement. It didn't say how much we needed on the letter to get caught up, but I'm assuming it's about 3 months. And to make this, just to throw a little something else in the picture, this last payment I sent in last week, I've been making the payment the first of every month, even though I'm 3 months behind.
Michael, hang on. You hear the music, which means that our time is running short. Let me give you some very quick advice. You need to call your lender tomorrow morning,
mm-hmm,
and talk to them about what you need to do. And what you may need to do is file suit in small claims court to stop the foreclosure so that you can get everything back in order and on top of things.
What kind
and
of file bankruptcy?
No, you don't need to file bankruptcy. This is a foreclosure action. It just stops the foreclosure while you talk to the lender. But the first thing I want you to do is call the lender and have a conversation and try to get some help that way. And then you may need to get your own attorney involved, somebody else who's separate from this attorney that's kind of processing this foreclosure, to make sure that somebody is hearing you. Send me your email at, send me a letter at questions@thinklink.com, and I'll try to help you from my end as well if it's a lender that I have some sort of conversations with. All right? And why don't we talk again next week and make sure that you are on the right path. All right, everybody, I gotta run. It's 59 minutes past the hour, but I'll be back next Sunday at 12 o'clock. It's football season. Coverage starts Saturday at 4. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on 95.5 FM and AM 750, News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show. Live on Sundays, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Oops, my chair is getting caught on my table here. Okay, we are rebuilding America one house at a time, starting with yours. Go to the website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Sign up for my free weekly newsletter. Follow me on Twitter. We've got a whole thing going on G+. We are very connected here in the social media world, and we would love to connect with you. So go ahead and do that. And if you're looking for ThinkLink community information, you're going to find it at AOL and at Yahoo and at CBS News, the Equifax Finance blog, which is just a great source, like 900 really great pages of information on how credit affects you and your tax issues and real estate, investing, retirement, family money, insurance. Really important when it comes to insurance. So all things on credit at the Equifax Finance blog, so that's good as well. 404-872-0750. So we were talking with Wendy, and she went to go to refinance her own rental property. She's married, but this is her property. She's had it for years, and what she found was her husband's name all over the documents, even though nobody ever asked her for any of her husband's information, and she qualified all on her own. Deborah joins me now on the phone. Deborah, you're a divorce attorney, is that right?
Right, and here's one of the things that happens. Even though this may have been her premarital property, once you're married, we are an equitable division state. So the documents they were asking her husband to sign were not to give him an interest in the property, but to say that he's aware that she's refinancing this property and he's waiving his interest in it. Because you can imagine that it often happens where people will start refinancing property. They get it without the knowledge of their spouse. They could be taking marital equity out of a property without their spouse knowing it. So it's really to protect the spouses so that they're saying, yes, I have knowledge she's refinancing. It's her money. She can have it. And they have to notify the spouse, even if they have no interest in the property, no anything in the property, saying,
right, but Deborah, that doesn't sound, that's one page. That doesn't sound like what she was describing. What it sounds to me as though is that they put his name on the mortgage, his name is owner on the deed, his name all the way through the documentation. When you have a spouse signing off on that, and I have done that with property my husband owns,
that's not
what it looks like.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to know what she was telling. When she did mention they were saying, well, this is a community property state and it was a refinance, you know, it's hard to know what she really saw. You know, sometimes you see one name on one page and that makes you go crazy. Oh, my God, his name's on the page. And maybe she didn't talk to her husband about the refinance. Who knows? But, I mean, I think that most of the time, I'm not, the banks do get it. Most of the time they get it right. I mean, they do this all the time, and I'd be doubtful. I've never seen where they try to put a spouse on a property that, but you know, in her case, that may have been it, but it smells to me a little bit like she didn't want to have his name on anything, but you know, who knows?
Well, I understand having to sign, you know, where the spouse has to sign something that says, this isn't it. Again, I've done that with property that Sam owns in his own name, but she actually took it to her friend who's a real estate attorney and showed him, and he was like, no.
Don't sign that, because it may have been more than what she expected it to be. But
maybe.
I'm just saying that most of the time to tell people that if they ask a spouse to sign, it doesn't mean they're giving them an interest in the property.
Right.
Maybe in this case it was just a mistake. But in general, your spouse will have to sign something when you're refinancing, even if it's a premarital property.
Sounds good. A great point. Thanks for making it.
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.
You too. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Joan joins me on the line. Hi, Joan.
Hi.
What's going on?
I want to know if it's legal to include the next year's homeowner's insurance on the HUD 1 settlement statement and the closing costs and the next year's taxes on the settlement statement for closing costs when this year's taxes were prorated and they charged $726 to the seller, but yet they've got that included in the closing costs.
Okay, so let's talk about what exactly you're seeing, because I'm a little confused by it. So when you have a HUD-1 statement, a HUD-1 statement shows you all the money that's going into the deal, right, that's coming from the sale, and all of the money that's going out and where it's going. Right? That's what a HUD-1 does. It shows you how the money moves in the transaction. Right?
Yes.
So, are you the buyer in this property or the seller?
I'm the seller, and I was an heir, and I wasn't included in the negotiations. And I received some papers showing that the man should have possession and closed by August 11th. And the real estate agent didn't call me until August the 15th, wanting to know if I'd signed the papers. I didn't even have any papers.
Okay. Who did the negotiations for you? Was there an executor of the estate?
My two sisters did everything without including me.
Why did they do that if you weren't...
Wait,
hold on a second, Joan. Why did they do all the negotiation and not include you if you were in error?
The judge ordered the house to be sold, and the real estate agent claimed she didn't know anything about me Friday when she called, but when I called her Monday, I said, wasn't my name on the judge's order? And she said, yes. So my sister signed to give him a credit of $6,500 towards repairs on the house.
Uh-huh.
And that's charged us on the front of the closing statement. And then they put the next year's homeowner's insurance on the closing cost and the next year's taxes on the closing cost. And the loan was for $107,000 and the selling price was $109,000.
Okay, so let's back it up a little bit. I don't understand what kind of a loan the buyer got for almost 100% of the sales price of the property, unless the property is worth a lot more, and they did an appraisal, and the appraisal came back at like $130,000.
We're trying to get an appraisal now, and the buyer signed papers to buy the house for $89,000, and he was supposed to close by August 11th and have possession. The real estate agent called me August 15th.
Hold on a second. I don't understand how he could have a loan for $107,000 but buy the property for $89,000.
Well, he said he wasn't willing to buy it later unless he got two lots that didn't go with the house and the judge didn't order sold. So he's supposedly paying $10,000 a lot, another $20,000, which makes it $109,000, and his loan is $107,000.
You called me, Joan, because you know this doesn't smell right.
No, it doesn't.
But you must not be talking to your sisters.
No, we've been ordered not to talk to each other.
Uh-huh. And why is that? What happened with your sisters?
On the estate, contrary to my mother's will, they went in and cleaned out everything out of the house. It was supposed to be divided. And there's been some disputes about that, and we were ordered not to talk to each other.
Okay, so they basically pillaged the house.
Yes.
And you got mad, and you sued them?
They sued me first to force the sale of a house right after my mother died, and they hadn't even told me. I had been talking to them then. They hadn't even told me the house was for sale. And then they told me to get an attorney, and I didn't want to. And then after I paid an attorney $900, they dismissed the suit. And then I kept the attorney, and when we found out they'd pillaged the house, he transferred it over to another court from probate court.
Okay. And so where does that lawsuit stand?
It was supposed to go to court in August, and they got a continuance, and then this house sale came up. August the 15th is when the real estate agent first called me.
Mm-hmm. So they can't do anything unless you sign the documents.
Well, it's funny about the lots. It does not smell right, but I wanted to know, is it legal to include next year's homeowner's insurance on the settlement statement, next year's taxes? And
yeah, you can pay anything you want for a buyer. Who's the buyer? Is the buyer connected in some ways to either of your sisters?
I don't know, but I wouldn't doubt it.
Right. It sounds to me like it's either a straw buyer, meaning it's not a real person. It is a real person, but that that person is really just doing this for your two sisters or somebody connected to them, so they're trying to get a sweetheart deal. So that may be one possibility. Or that this person, the straw buyer, is actually somehow in cahoots with them and they're all going to share it.
My sister told me right after my mother died that they were going to sell the lot, two lots separate, because they could get more money from for them separate. And that now they're saying that the buyer says he wants the lots. And when I talked to the real estate agent, which called me August 15th, after it was supposed to have taken possession and nobody had notified me, when she called, she said it's so close to the appraisal, the asking price. And then she, when I called her back later that afternoon, she said, it's sold for $109. He's not going to buy the house unless he gets the lots. Then they sent me, then I got
paid. All right, Joan, let me stop you here and just say that the answer to your question is it's illegal for sellers to pay for anything or give credits for anything they want to, for the most part. I mean, lenders get a little nervous about it. I don't know who this person's lender is. You have to decide at the end of the day if you're going to take your $35,000 and walk away and never speak to anybody again, or if you're going to fight this. If you fight this, you're going to spend more on the legal fees than you're ever going to get from it. I know it's your mother's house and you're emotionally connected to it and you're mad at your sisters, and there is so much going on here that I can't even begin to unravel. But I think you should go back to your sisters and say, I want $35,000 cash, and you can do whatever the hell you want with this property, and I don't really care anymore, because it's going to eat you up alive to live through the fight, and I don't think you're going to end up with any more money at the end of it, and probably you'll end up with less. It's 18 minutes past the hour on the Elise Glink Show, Rebuilding America One House at a Time. Our number, 404-872-0750 on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinklink.com and find Elise Glink live midday every Sunday on 95.5 FM and AM 750. News Talk WSB.
26 minutes past the hour, News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. 404-872-0750. We've got some lines open. Happy to take your calls. 1-800-WSB-TALK. I got an email from Karen, who's a real estate agent in Atlanta. She's been listening to the show, and she said, love your show. Just wanted to add some input from an agent in the trenches selling in the $20,000 to $80,000 price range. She says it is very difficult to find financing for very low price homes that low income people could pay for. Remember, I said earlier on the show that if you're flipping burgers for minimum wage, really hard to get a mortgage that's going to buy a house. And she said that government financing regulations have ended the ability for most lenders to provide financing under $50,000. That's been true for a number of years, by the way. My lender friends all tell me that it's just not worth their while to do loans for less than maybe $40,000, $50,000. In Chicago, they won't even do it for less than $75,000. For someone making $10 an hour, she says, working 40 hours a week, you can't pay more than $350 a month for a house payment. That is a really low-priced house. Also, because I suggested you go to HUDHomestore.com and take a look for a HUD home, which is an FHA foreclosure, she says that while HUD is a good provider for homes for owner-occupants, even if the HUD property condition report says no repairs are needed, when you actually get to the inspection, there's usually something wrong, and then the house won't pass the inspection or appraisal, and HUD will not allow repairs before closing, which means that if you're trying to get financing for these houses, your lender will not allow you to qualify because the HUD won't pass inspection. Yet if the seller wants to then fix the property, or the lender or whoever, they can't do it. Or if you want to fix the property before you actually even own it so you can close on it, you can't do it. So you end up in a catch-22 when trying to buy a HUD home. She says, in closing, I see the bottom layer of home ownership. Really important stuff. We're going to talk about all of those things and more, and it's true. This is why, one reason why so many HUD homes are going to investors paying cash. 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. I'm Elise Glink, Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Be right back on News Talk WSB. Hey, welcome back, everybody, to the Elise Glink Show, live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Rebuilding America One House at a Time, starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. If you haven't been to my website, you should go. ThinkGlink.com, THINKGLINK.com. Sign up for the free weekly newsletter. If you're interested in investing in real estate and you want to take advantage of what I am certain is the last gasp of this foreclosure cycle, the next 6 to 9 months are going to be key. This is your chance to scoop up properties. I just got an email from Karen, who's an agent in the northern part of Atlanta, the Atlanta metro area, and she's still selling houses for $20,000 to $80,000. Those properties are prime investment properties. How do I know? Because when you can buy a house for $20,000 and it has 3 bedrooms and 2 baths, even if it needs work, you're going to be able to make money when you rent it out at even $500 to $800 a month. And that is what goes into making a great investment. I talk about all of this in my new series, The Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate. It's an 18-part series, 9 parts of 9 webinars, totaling more than 2.5 hours of time, webinar time, and 9 ebooks with more than 250 pages of information. All of that together provides you with some very important, essential, basic information on how to get started investing and how to take advantage of these incredible prices and still incredible interest rates. 4.5% on a 30-year fixed is a great interest rate, no matter how you cut it, even if it's scary to some people, even if you think that it could go lower again, fine, maybe it will. But I'm telling you, for investors, if you can actually buy property and finance it at 4.5% to 5%, over the long run of owning these properties, and I am a buy and hold believer, you're going to make money and you're going to do well. And I've seen it in my own properties that I rent out, and I've seen it in my own house. This is a great way to build wealth, true wealth. So go to thinklink.com, click on the red house, and read more about the Intentional Investor, How to Be Wildly Successful in Real Estate webinar series, webinar and ebook series. 404-872-0750. Let's see if we can take some calls. Nancy joins me on the line from Buchanan. Hey, Nancy.
Hey.
What's going on?
My husband and I are both in our 60s, and we're on a limited income, fixed income. Mm-hmm. And we were just approved for a homeowner's modification. And what we're concerned about, because we're trying to keep our home, and we weren't planning on moving it, but we had like a $2,000 a month house payment, and we couldn't afford it. They brought the note down to like $800 a month. The interest is down to like 2%. But mm-hmm. what we're worried about is they told us there's a balloon note in 20 years. We have to pay it off on the balloon payment in 20 years. We're both going to be a lot older then, and we don't know what we're going to be doing. As far as, you don't have a choice about accepting it or negotiating with them. They gave us 3 months trial period payment before it becomes firm. And we don't know if, like, we're going to have to just hang on to the house for a little while longer and then fix it to sell it because we're worried about a balloon note. Or it's supposed to be a government loan, not a mortgage company's loan, even though the mortgage company did it for us.
All right, Nancy, let's back up a little bit. So what happened that you suddenly couldn't afford your mortgage?
My husband had surgery, and he didn't recover from the surgery. And he had a quitted job, and I'd been out of work for 3 years.
Wow. Okay. So you need some help if you want to stay in this property.
Right.
That's the first thing. Now, they're bringing the loan down to 2%. Is this now an interest-only loan?
They just said 2%. I haven't seen any of the documentation because they're not going to mail it until after we do the second trial payment.
Okay. So the concern, of course, is that you don't fall into this trap of they're going to give you 3 trial payments and then they're not going to actually go through with the permanent modification and then you'll really be behind on your payment? So you're going to have to watch out for that. What is the lender who's the servicer for this loan?
Ocwen, O-C-W-E-N.
Okay. Ocwen is actually regulated by the OCC, and that's good news for you. They regulate the very big banks as well. They regulate about 45 lenders, and they're regulating Ocwen. And so if Ocwen doesn't give you a permanent modification, you should immediately file with helpwithmybank.gov. And then help, H-E-L-P, with mybank.gov. And then you should email me the case number, and I will forward it to somebody at the OCC. That's if they don't come through. But you don't have a choice right now. So immediately what you should do is accept this deal if it brings it down to something that's affordable for you. I assume it is.
Yes.
So
like 800 something a month.
Okay. So now it's affordable for you, and now that buys you time to actually figure out what you're going to do.
Yeah, that's what we're worried about.
But what you need to understand, do you have any equity in this house? Have you lived there a long time?
Only 10 years, so not much equity in it at all.
Okay. So you have to make sure that the interest-only loan, that this is not an interest-only loan, so that the full house payment would be due in 20 years. But even if it was, my guess is you'll probably have equity built up by then. And if you had to sell in 20 years, you'd walk away with some cash, and you'd never have to make the balloon payment.
Okay.
If, as I expect, this is an interest and principal loan, so you're actually adding to the paying down the loan as you go along, even at a very low rate. If that's the case, you're going to build up equity anyway in this property. And that's also good news, so that if you have to sell, you'll sell. My guess is that you and your husband, getting into your late 80s, probably won't stay in this house. You're going to move anyway. And so the inevitable, we're going to have to do a balloon payment, isn't going to happen. But even if it did, right, even if you got to that point, you'd still be on the same fixed income, and provided interest rates are somewhere normal, you'd be able to refinance whatever little is left in your loan, whatever the balloon amount is going to be. You'd be able to refinance it at that time, and you're refinancing for much less because you've been paying down the loan all this time. So I think either way it's going to work out. So the first thing I want you to do is take a deep breath and say to yourself, this is going to be fine. You're buying yourself time. If you didn't accept this, you'd have to move right away. Now you don't have to, and that's a good thing.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. I really appreciate it. I'm not sure if I understand the difference between that 2% interest only or 2% you said with principal.
So let me explain that to you. That's a good question. Thank you for asking it. An interest-only, let's say, what is the balloon amount? Well, how much is the loan for?
Well, the balloon amount is around 150-something thousand. Originally, the loan was for 225,000.
Okay.
So we paid some down on that in 10 years.
So okay.
Probably, I'm not sure what it is right now.
All right. So the amount of the refinance is 150, and is it going to stay 150 at the end of 20 years?
Well, at the end of 20 years, it's going to be to pay off the 1,500 and some, 1,000, you know, 500 and something dollars.
$150,000?
Right.
Okay.
That's the balloon note.
So it looks like if you're refinancing and the amount of the refinance is 150 and you're going to have to pay 150 in 20 years, that means you have an interest-only loan. If in 20 years the 150 is going to be 75,000, then you have an interest and principal loan and you're paying down some of the principal.
Oh, that's a better one.
That would be a better one. But you have to ask that question. Now, if the amount that you have left on your loan is 200,000, but the balloon will be 150, that means you're still paying down $50,000 of equity over the time.
Uh-huh.
So you need to look at, when they send you the documents, you need to look very carefully at them to understand. But do you know where your what your house is actually worth right now?
It went down in value from 225 to about 215.
Okay. So if the balloon amount will be 150, that means there's inherently some equity in the property.
Okay.
$65,000 of equity. This is basic math, addition and subtraction. You just have to know the numbers that you're working with. So take a look at the documentation when they send it, just so you know what's going into it. And if you still don't understand, you can either send me an email at questions@thinklink.com, or you can call the show back.
Okay.
All right?
All right, that sounds good. I appreciate you explaining it because it's a nerve-wracking thing to go through that.
Oh, my God. Nancy, I imagine you and your husband aren't even sleeping at night.
No, we haven't been for months.
All right, I want you to go and take a nap this afternoon, and then I want you to have a good night's sleep, because the first hurdle is to get this in place so it buys you at least the 3 months of time, and you can figure out what you have. The second hurdle is to make it permanent, and the third hurdle is going to come down the line 20 years from now, and by then I think everybody's going to be in a lot different place.
Okay.
But there's going to be equity in the property, and you're going to be fine.
Okay. That makes me feel a lot better. I really appreciate that. And we're just doing the best that we can do. But I also wanted to ask, it's supposed to be a government loan, like the HAMP loan.
Yeah. It's a HARP refinance, it sounds
right.
like.
Right. Are they allowed to do a balloon note?
They can do anything they want to do, yes.
Okay.
There's no regulation that says you have to do it this way or this way. It's just, you know, that you have to provide some help. And not even you have to provide some help. You're supposed to provide some help. So Aquin is providing you some help. Is it the best help you could get? Probably not. Is it the only help you're going to get? Definitely. At least for now. So take a deep breath. You're going to be fine. And call me back or send an email to questions@thinklink.com if you don't understand the paperwork when you get it. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glenk. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. 48 minutes past the hour. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB. Five minutes past the hour. News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glenk. Rebuilding America, one house at a time. Starting with yours. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Michael joins me on the line. Hi, Michael.
Oh, yes, Elise. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's going on?
Well, I kind of got in a situation. I know you're going to get on to me for it.
oh, no. That's a bad way to start this call.
Well,
what happened?
I got in a, let's say my wife got in a situation, I guess, about a year or so ago where she lost her job.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of started getting behind my mortgage. Went through the modification. Got approved for that. Knocked off about $200 a month off my mortgage. Things started going seemingly better, I thought. But being that she lost her employment, working, ironically, for a mortgage company, I just started falling behind again even after the modification. Well, I got to the point to where I was about 3 months behind, I guess, about 3 months. But I started seeing a light at the end of the tunnel. My wife found another means of employment, and I started making a little more money. So it got to the point to where I got 3 months behind, but at the third month, I was making my mortgage payment that first week. But like clockwork, but I was still remaining 3 months behind.
Right.
Well, I got all my other bills caught up. Got 3 kids starting college this month, and
wow.
That cost me a lot to get them going, and 1 kid still in high school. And I started seeing that light and then the tunnel where I got my cars caught up, all the rest of the bills caught up, and I'm saying, great, now I can finally get this mortgage caught up. And lo and behold, I get home yesterday, and there's 2 letters, one certified and one not certified from an attorney's office. Stating the one that was certified said, I apologize for not having a letter right here in front of me, but it's a big thick certified letter saying something to the effect of intent to foreclose.
Okay.
And there was another one that's not certified, sent at the exact same time by the same attorney's office, that says it was a different type of letter that said this is an attempt to collect the debt also, da-da-da-da, this to let you know you can either pay off the remaining balance of your house or contact us for payment to pay the house off or possible reinstatement. It didn't say how much, you know, we needed on the letter to get caught up
I'm assuming it's about 3 months. And to make this, just to throw a little something else in the picture, this last payment I sent in last week, I've been making that the payment the first of every month, even though I'm 3 months behind.
Michael, hang on. You hear the music, which means that our time is running short. Let me give you some very quick advice. You need to call your lender tomorrow morning and talk to them about what you need to do. And what you may need to do is file suit in small claims court to stop the foreclosure so that you can get everything back in order and on top of things.
What kind of bankruptcy?
No, you don't need to file bankruptcy. This is a foreclosure action. It just stops the foreclosure while you talk to the lender. But the first thing I want you to do is call the lender and have a conversation and try to get some help that way. And then you may need to get your own attorney involved, somebody else who's separate from this attorney that's kind of processing this foreclosure, to make sure that somebody is hearing you. Send me your email at, send me a letter at questions@thinklink.com, and I'll try to help you from my end as well if it's a lender that I have some sort of conversations with. All right? And why don't we talk again next week and make sure that you are on the right path. All right, everybody, I gotta run. It's 59 minutes past the hour, but I'll be back next Sunday at 12 o'clock. It's football season. Coverage starts Saturday at 4. Take care, everybody. Have a good week.